Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Sam, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, update on T-cell lymphoma. This is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and the Lymphoma Research Foundation, and I must say that the Lymphoma Research Foundation has played a critically important role in making today's program possible in selecting the speakers and topics, so I really want to thank them enormously. We also have a number of other collaborating organizations as well, and it is because of all of our work together that we've been able to reach so many of you, and of course your interest in the program. And we have on the call today over 687 participants on the call, and you come from all of the United States, and we have international participants from Canada, Kenya, Korea, United Kingdom, and Venezuela. So you really are from all over the world. Today's program is supported through unrestricted educational grants to the Lymphoma Research Foundation from Celgene Corporation, Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, and Seattle Genetics. And I really want to thank them for their support of this program today and their collaborative effort to support this program today. Now, you have received some information from Cancer Care about today's program, and in that information there is an evaluation form, and we very much encourage you to complete the evaluation form. You know, your feedback really does help us to pick the right programs that you really need. You're the best people to tell us what you really want us to offer. Indeed, the workshop today on T-cell lymphoma is a topic that many of you have asked us to offer, and so here it is. So tell us what you want, and we'll try very hard to implement those programs as we move forward. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to begin by introducing our first speaker, Dr. Julie Vos. Dr. Vos is a Newman M. and Mildred E. Harris Professor, Chief Division of Hematology Oncology, Professor of Medicine, University of Nebraska Medical Center. And Dr. Vos is going to address an overview of T-cell lymphoma, current treatment options, and the importance of communicating with your healthcare team. It's really my pleasure now to turn this program over to Dr. Vos.
Thank you so much, Carolyn. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with everybody today. And we'll try to make this very informative and leave plenty of time for questions at the end. So my job is to just kind of give you a little bit of a general overview of the T-cell lymphomas, talk about some of the current treatment options, and then just talk about how to work with your healthcare team to try to make sure that you can get all the information and, that you need. So first of all, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma is one of two major subtypes of lymphoma, the other being Hodgkin's lymphoma. The difference would be just basically the type of cell that causes the lymphoma. And Sir Thomas Hodgkin's was the first one that named the Hodgkin's, and therefore everything else was called non-Hodgkin's. And then there's major subtypes of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that we're discovering more and more new types every day. Basically, 85% of all non-Hodgkin lymphoma are B-cell lymphomas, and about 15% are T-cell lymphomas. That's the information for North America. In different parts of the world, it may be higher percentages of T-cell lymphoma, such as Asia, Japan, Korea, some of those locations have a higher incidence of T-cell lymphoma. And even within the same country, there may be different incidence of different types of lymphomas and higher incidence of T-cell lymphoma in certain parts of the country, such as southern Japan versus other areas in Japan. So kind of important. But in North America, it's about 15% of all non-Hodgkin's lymphoma that are T-cell lymphomas. Now, there's many different subtypes of T-cell lymphoma, so it's very important to know exactly what subtype we're talking about with respect to what the presentation is, what kind of symptoms a person has, what their prognosis might be, and also what the proper treatment might be. So that's very important to know that we have the right diagnosis. So the very first important concept that I want you to take away from today is that you need to make sure that the biopsy that has given the diagnosis is reviewed by expert hematopathologists if possible to make sure that they're dealing with that you're dealing with the right type of diagnosis, that you can be assured that that is understood and the right treatment is being prescribed for you. So T-cell lymphomas are actually going up in incidence over the past couple of decades, and some of this may be just better recognition of the different subtypes of lymphomas, including the T-cell lymphomas, but some of it's probably real. This would include mostly different types of what are called mature T-cell lymphomas, and those are the types that are a little bit more faster growing. And we're seeing that over the past a couple of decades, the incidence of T-cell lymphoma has been increasing probably as much as over 200% in North America. Now, the different subtypes of T-cell lymphoma we're going to go over here today. Unfortunately, we don't know what causes most types of T-cell lymphomas. There are a couple types that we have some associations with, very specific types. That would include a subtype called HTLV-1, and that can that's a virus that can be associated with adult T-cell leukemia lymphoma. This particular type of a T-cell lymphoma is only found mostly in Japan and the Caribbean, but there are some cases in the United States as well, and this is associated with that specific virus, but very uncommon that we would see that mostly in North America. Also, there's some other associations with other types of T-cell lymphomas, such as the NK T-cell lymphomas, which are a very uncommon subtype, and those are associated with a different virus called the Epstein-Barr virus. But for most cases with the T-cell lymphoma, or B-cell lymphoma for that matter, we don't really know what causes it in any specific person or type of lymphoma, unfortunately. Now, the newest classification system that we have for lymphomas gets more and more complex over the years, but the last system that we have was published in 2008 called the World Health Organization, or WHO, classification, and that helps us to delineate the different types of all different types of B and T-cell lymphomas. For the T-cell lymphomas, they're divided into kind of two major categories. One would be what we call the immature T-cell lymphomas, and there's really only a couple of types in there. Those would be types of lymphomas that grow very quickly, and we need to have very high-dose aggressive treatment, chemotherapy, for those types of patients. And those would be the types of lymphomas called T-cell lymphoblastic lymphoma or a blastic natural killer cell lymphoma, but those are fairly uncommon, require very specific types of therapy. Most patients would have what was in the category of the mature or peripheral T-cell neoplasms, and those are subdivided into different areas as well. One good way to think about this is kind of where the lymphoma is in the body as a classification and then subtypes within that. So one type of lymphoma that's a T-cell lymphoma typically is in the blood or in the bone marrow or disseminated throughout the body. And those would be some subtypes that we, a couple of which we talked about, the adult T-cell leukemia lymphoma, also some other subtypes called pro-lymphocytic leukemia or lymphoma, and NKT cell leukemia lymphoma. There's also some other types of T-cell lymphomas that present or have symptoms mostly including enlarged lymph nodes. Those would be angioimmunoblastic T-cell lymphoma, anaplastic large cell lymphoma, a category called peripheral T-cell not otherwise specified, and this is probably multiple different types of lymphomas that have been lumped together that we don't entirely understand at this point. But with further testing, we're understanding there's more subtypes there too that make up that entire classification. And then there's a whole other category of T-cell lymphomas that are primarily outside of the lymph node system. And those would include a lot of the T-cell lymphomas that are in the skin, such as mycosis fungoides, which is a very slow-growing type of lymphoma, Sézary syndrome, which is a part of that classification, which includes the lymphoma in the skin, diffuse redness of the skin, and usually lymphoma cells in the blood and bone marrow. Also, primary cutaneous CD30 positive anaplastic large cell lymphoma that usually presents in the skin alone. Other types of lymphoma that's in the skin, which a lot of different classifications in there. T-cell NK cell lymphoma that's in the nose or nasal area or sinuses. There's also some T-cell lymphomas that like to be in the GI tract, so in the stomach or in the bowels, or in the liver or spleen. All these different types of T-cell lymphomas are have different symptoms that the person may have, and they also need to be treated very differently. So very important to know exactly what type of T-cell lymphoma that you have. Now, what kinds of things do we look at as far as trying to decide on the treatment for some of these lymphomas? That would include not only the type of lymphoma, which is probably the most important part, but also trying to look at different stage, that is the extent of the lymphoma, age of the person, do they have any other medical problems such as heart problems or lung problems that may limit some of the drugs that we use for the treatment, and then just the overall extent of the disease. All this information is needed to be ascertained before the person can have their plan for therapy made, and that would include a very good biopsy to make sure we know exactly what type of lymphoma. Usually we would do other scans or biopsies based upon the type of lymphoma and what information we need, as well as some blood tests to make sure we test the liver tests and kidney tests and blood counts. Then based upon the type of lymphoma, the stage of lymphoma, and other factors, we can make a plan for therapy for the patients. Currently, there's a number of different options, and again, the different options for treatment are very important to know what type of lymphoma we're dealing with, an extental lymphoma. Lots of times the lymphomas that are in the skin, we use to start out with some skin-directed therapy, and that could include some creams or some topical agents that may be directed just at the spots where the lymphoma is, or sometimes we would recommend some ultraviolet light treatments that usually are done in a dermatologist's office. Those are directed at the skin lesions as well as the other skin surface areas. Sometimes we would recommend some localized radiation therapy to the skin or overall radiation therapy to the skin. And this, again, is based upon the type of lymphoma and the extent of the disease. If skin-directed therapies don't work, then typically for the patients with these mycosis fungoides or skin lymphomas, we would recommend other therapies such as some oral therapies that are pills, prednisone or bexarotene are two options for pills. And then ultimately we do need to go to more systemic therapies for these patients. And that could include some new therapies we have that more recently have been approved, and those include some therapies given through the vein. Romidepsin is one option that's relatively new for treatment with patients with mycosis fungoides. Pralatrexate or Ontak are also medications that are given for that type of therapy. So these patients are often given multiple treatments over a very long period of time, years, and we need to make sure that we try to decrease the side effects and only use the therapies that we need at the time. For the patients with the more aggressive or faster-growing types of T-cell lymphomas, more of the peripheral T-cell lymphomas, we typically would start with chemotherapy for those patients. And there's lots of different options for therapy. Unfortunately, we don't know the best option for patients with T-cell lymphoma. Many times they're treated with the same chemotherapy drugs we use for other types of lymphomas, but we're always trying to look at new options and new combinations of drugs to see if we can improve upon those results. And that would include adding things like older chemotherapy drugs such as etoposide or VP16 to our treatment, or making different combinations of our therapy as well as with the new drugs. For specific types of T-cell lymphomas, we do need to use some alternative chemotherapy regimens, or sometimes we use radiation therapy for localized therapy. I do want to talk a little bit about the use of stem cell transplantation for patients with T-cell lymphoma. There's not randomized trials or where patients are randomized to receive transplant or not to see if this is a good option. But some of the historical control information would say that perhaps an option for improving the results for patients with T-cell lymphoma would be the use of autologous or self-transplantation as part of their initial management. And this is an option for patients at some locations or with some types of T-cell lymphoma. Once a lymphoma comes back after the first time or relapses, there's a number of different options that we look at for potential treatment. Some of these are very specific to the type of lymphoma, such as new medications such as brentuximab vedotin, which is an anti-CD30 antibody that has a chemotherapy attached to it. That's approved specifically for anaplastic large cell lymphoma, which is CD30 positive. We also have some other relatively new drugs we mentioned previously under the CTCL category, such as romidepsin or pralatrexate, that are relatively newly approved, and Dr. Horowitz will talk about those a little bit more in detail later. At the time of relapse, we also consider other standard forms of chemotherapy. If a person is under a certain age or in good medical condition, we may also consider a stem cell transplant, either using your own cells out of the blood or bone marrow, or using another person's cells, such as an allotransplant, what we call allogeneic transplant, at the time of relapse as an option for treatment. So a lot of this has to be very individualized based upon the type of lymphoma, the individual person, any other healthcare issues, and age, that sort of thing. So I think the most important thing is that you communicate well with your healthcare team to make sure you get all your questions asked and answered. A good idea is to write down all of your questions before the appointment so you remember that. Try to take someone with you to make sure that you haven't forgotten any of the questions. And then to be able to make sure that you can communicate well with your healthcare team and understand what they're saying in your specific situation so you can get all the information that's necessary. And I think I'm going to turn that back over to Carolyn at this point, and we'll be answering questions a little bit later.
Thank you so much, Dr. Vose, for really such a comprehensive overview and also covering all of the different options, and also for the guidelines about talking with one's healthcare team. That's so important. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Stephen Horwitz. Dr. Horwitz is Assistant Attending Physician, the Lymphoma Service, Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. And Dr. Horwitz is going to address new treatment approaches, the role of clinical trials, and quality of life concerns, including treatment side effects. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Horwitz.
Thank you, and it's really a pleasure to be here, and thanks, Julie, for that great overview. I'm going to talk a little about some of the new approaches, pick up a little bit on what Dr. Vose was saying, and then also talk about clinical trials. I'll start off by saying, you know, a lot of the new treatments that we have for T-cell lymphoma, and historically in the past, a lot of the treatments we used were borrowed from other lymphomas, and we're developing more treatments now specifically for T-cell lymphomas. Really, all that knowledge and progress is coming from clinical trials and from people who in the past have participated in clinical trials. So it's really very important and integral to how we take care of patients. So when we look at the different kinds of new therapies for T-cell lymphomas, some of it are new treatments that kind of work across the spectrum of T-cell lymphomas that were described, and other ones are sort of geared towards more the specific part of someone's disease course. I'll talk a little bit more about that, whether it's an initial treatment of an aggressive lymphoma or whether it's a lymphoma that has come back after other treatments. The skin lymphomas are often slower growing, and often the treatments or the new treatments we look at for the skin lymphomas may be milder and really focusing more on less side effects as opposed to more intensive therapy. But as you just heard, most people in the country get combination chemotherapy, certainly if they have a new diagnosis of an aggressive T-cell lymphoma or one of the systemic or peripheral T-cell lymphomas. And mostly, historically, that's been combination chemotherapies like CHOP, so cyclophosphamide, doxorubicin, vincristine, prednisone, sort of the kinds of chemotherapy regimens that we use for other lymphomas. In the past, people have used other chemotherapy drugs that are used for other cancers, things like gemcitabine, drugs like etoposide. So these are other chemotherapy drugs that we've sort of learned through experience can work for T-cell lymphomas, but most of those drugs have never been formally or sort of extensively formally studied. It was just things that doctors knew they could use in certain situations. So that all kind of changed a little bit with a couple of new drugs that started being developed specifically for T-cell lymphomas. You've heard about a few of these. The first one was pralatrexate, which is an intravenous chemotherapy, and that was a drug that was initially designed for lung cancers, but then it was recognized that there was good responses in people getting T-cell lymphoma, and then larger studies were done specifically in T-cell lymphoma. Now, when you look at these new drugs, one of the things you remember that in the clinical trials, mostly the people who would first get these new medicines are people whose lymphomas had come back after sometimes one or sometimes many other tries at treating. And in the early pralatrexate studies for T-cell lymphomas, we noticed about a third of people got better, and then many of those people could stay better sometimes for months, sometimes as long as a year or so with that single medicine after their lymphoma had come back, often after multiple other chemotherapy tries. The next new drug that we now commonly use that was developed in clinical trials that now we commonly use sort of every day in our practices is a drug called romidepsin. And that's another intravenous drug. It's a little different than typical chemotherapies. It's something called a histone deacetylase inhibitor, which really affects more of the way the cells sort of do their business, or the way the cells sort of grow and divide, rather than non-specifically killing cells like many chemotherapies. That drug's given intravenous weekly, and then looks like that drug has good activity both in the faster-growing T-cell lymphomas, the peripheral T-cell lymphomas, as well as in the cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, and it's actually been looked at for both of those. Very similar to the pralatrexate, when the clinical trials were done and we look at that drug, about a third or so of people who get treated will get better. And then again, many of the people who get better can be used can use that drug in a continuous fashion, meaning they can stay on it to keep their disease under control often for a year or more. And then the third new drug that we actually have approved that's gone through clinical trials and met FDA approval for T-cell lymphomas is the brentuximab vedotin, which you already heard about. And that is something that we call an antibody-drug conjugate. So antibodies are proteins that the body normally makes that target things like infections. So when you get a flu vaccine, your body's normal lymphocytes will make antibodies that target influenza, and therefore if you're exposed to influenza, the immune system is already sort of primed to attack that. You can make antibodies in the laboratory, and this is an antibody that targets a feature on the surface of some lymphoma cells called CD30. The features on cell surfaces often are called CD and then get a number after them. And we know that certain kinds of lymphoma, including anaplastic large cell lymphoma, which is one of the more common kinds of T-cell lymphoma, that those cells would pretty much always express CD30. So what the drug brentuximab vedotin does is it takes an antibody, attaches it to a little bit of chemotherapy, and then can use that to target the tumor cells or the cancer cells in people whose cancers express CD30. And particularly in this one kind of T-cell lymphoma, brentuximab vedotin has been very active in terms of 80% or so of people who get that medicine, that their lymphoma will shrink or go away at least temporarily. So that was sort of the last drug that kind of went through the clinical trials that's now available for people with T-cell lymphoma that even 3 or so years ago we had none of these drugs available. So the pace of research aided by clinical trials has really moved very well. So we look at where we are with T-cell lymphomas and we say, well, we know that a lot of people get treated with standard combination chemotherapies. Sometimes that's successful, sometimes it's not. So we're still looking for many new drugs or better treatments for this disease. And here we get into kind of a list of a lot of the new drugs that are being looked at. And they fall into a couple of different categories. So there's a number of drugs that are approved for other kinds of cancer, other kinds of lymphoma, that studies are being done or have been done recently that show that they can work for some people with T-cell lymphoma. And these include medicines like lenalidomide, which is a pill medicine that's commonly used for multiple myeloma, which is another kind of blood cancer, or myelodysplasia, which is another kind of blood cancer. And there's been some studies to show that that drug can be active in people with T-cell lymphoma. There's a drug called bendamustine. So this is a chemotherapy that's commonly used for many kinds of B-cell lymphoma. And there's been a study looking at that drug in T-cell lymphoma, and it looks like that drug can also shrink a lot of people's T-cell lymphoma, even if it's come back after other chemotherapies. There's a drug called L-asparaginase, which is used for many kinds of leukemia. And that drug looks particularly active in a certain kind of T-cell lymphoma called NKT cell lymphoma. So these are all drugs that are available for other diseases that people have studied with T-cell lymphoma, and it looks like they may have activity and usefulness for people with those diseases. Beyond the drugs that are already approved, there's a whole list of sort of very new drugs that are being looked at specifically in T-cell lymphomas. And again, this is a bit of a long list, but a lot of these studies are ongoing, or these drugs may be available for people looking for them. There's a drug called belinostat, which is a histone deacetylase inhibitor, sort of like the romidepsin, that has completed a fairly large phase 2 study, and we're waiting on those results. There's another antibody, so again, that protein that can target lymphoma cells. This one's called KW0761, so it's a long name. But that drug looks like it can treat some people with skin T-cell lymphomas or Sézary syndrome in the mycosis fungoides family, and also looks like that drug may be active in the kind of T-cell lymphoma called by the HTLV-1 virus, or something that we call adult T-cell leukemia lymphoma. And that drug's being studied at a number of centers right now around the United States for those two different kinds of T-cell lymphoma. There's a new pill treatment called an Aurora kinase inhibitor that goes by the name MLN-8237. Again, you don't have to remember this, but the thing to know is this is a pill medicine, kind of like a chemotherapy that's in early studies has shown some activity for T-cell lymphoma. And there's now two studies nationally in the U.S. Looking to treat people whose T-cell lymphoma has come back after other treatments. And those studies would be available widely. One is through the United States Cooperative Group. So we have these cooperative oncology groups. So one of the studies is being used through that. And the other is a study that's being sponsored by the maker of that drug. And that's a randomized study that's just opening now in the U.S. And I think will open a number of centers in Europe and possibly Asia as well. So that would be something if you're looking for new treatments, those drugs might be widely available. I think other smaller studies that are going on of looking at new drugs, there's things called kinase inhibitors, and there's some drugs that interfere with some of the pathways or some of the ways that the lymphoma cells use to stay alive. A lot of these are pill medicines. A number of them have low side effects, and there's a number of different of those medicines in early studies for T-cell lymphoma, and that's something, again, that people could look into. And then as we get some information on some of these new drugs, the next step is often to combine them. So if you think about the way the development of a new drug would go for T-cell lymphoma is first somebody would make an observation that in people whose lymphoma had come back after other therapies, maybe this drug can work. And those treatments, you're usually looking at how safe the drug is. You're looking at how often it gets people's lymphoma to shrink or gets it better. Does it ever get it completely better? A lot of these are medicines that if they worked well, a person could stay on them for a long time to try to control the disease. But it's very unusual that a new medicine in that situation would get rid of the disease forever, but could still be a very useful part of the therapy. So once you figure out that some of these medicines work and can help people, even if their lymphoma has come back a few times, you know, then the next step often in studies to try to put those medicines together. So can we add some of the new medicines together to see if they work even better against T-cell lymphoma? There's studies that are starting combining pralatrexate and romidepsin, two of the approved drugs. There's ongoing studies combining romidepsin with other chemotherapies, another chemotherapy called bortezomib, combinations with lenalidomide, and then a number of combinations with the brentuximab vedotin. And often what you'll do in that setting is you'll say, well, people's lymphoma has come back, but can we put some of these drugs together? Can we do it safely? And how often does that work? How well does it work? And is that a good strategy to take forward? And again, this is all done through clinical trials and requires doctors doing studies and people with lymphomas participating in these studies. And then I think the next step that we often look for is, well, if some of these medicines can help in terms of people whose lymphoma has come back, is there a way to add these medicines as part of initial therapy? Meaning, can we take our combination chemotherapy medicines where we put drugs together, and can we add some of these new drugs to make them work better or make them stronger? And those studies now, for the first time, are going on in T-cell lymphoma. So this is something very exciting because we think that if we can find better treatments when the disease, for the first treatment of the disease, those may be the times where you have the the greatest potential to really impact how the disease goes. So there's a study that Julie's leading, Dr. Vos is leading, that both she and I are working on, where pralatrexate is being added to initial combination chemotherapy to see, and that's being done in a number of centers in the United States, to see whether by adding one of these active new drugs, can we make the initial treatment work better, get more people into remission, keep more people into remission long term. There's some studies going on adding romidepsin to initial combination of chemotherapy, and there's a large international randomized study which is going to look at adding brentuximab vedotin, the new CD30 drug conjugate, that medicine I talked about, to initial chemotherapy. And that study is going to be available sort of throughout the U.S. and Europe, and what it's going to do is compare that to a standard chemotherapy regimen to try to prove that adding that drug to initial therapy would actually make the results better for people who have T-cell lymphomas that have that CD30 marker on their surface, which would be a number of people with T-cell lymphoma, but certainly not everyone. So those are kind of things that we're looking at in terms of new strategies of developing new treatments for T-cell lymphoma, and then ways of incorporating it into people's routine care. And I think it's something that it's important to talk to your doctors about. Whenever you have an uncommon disease like this or an uncommon lymphoma, your doctor may know ways that this can be successfully treated, but we're always trying to do better. And right now there's a lot of opportunities around where people are looking at new medicines either by themselves or incorporating new medicines in the treatment for T-cell lymphoma to really try to figure out ways to do better. And that's always, you know, best done and safest done through participation in a clinical trial. For people with cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, a lot of these newer treatments are also being looked at for cutaneous T-cell lymphomas, and there's also some new skin treatments or some new topical treatments that are being studied for people who have a skin T-cell lymphoma just limited to the skin who don't need treatment inside and outside their bodies. I think I'll finish there in terms of clinical trials, and that was a long list of a lot of the new treatments, which people can ask questions on more specifically, but there's a lot of that going on. And then just shift over just for a minute or so in terms of quality of life. So this is something that we get asked about. For the systemic T-cell lymphomas, which can often grow quickly and make you sick, for the skin T-cell lymphomas, which often grow slowly, but their presence on the skin can cause a lot of things like itching and discomfort. When we talk about quality of life, usually the greatest way to have a good quality of life is to find a treatment that controls the disease. And sort of numbers 1, 2, and 3 in terms of how you're feeling is really based on how well the disease is in control. And if the disease is not in good control, it's really hard to feel well. So the first suggestion in terms of quality of life is to try to find an effective treatment. Now, what happens is some of our treatments people feel pretty well on, and then, you know, it can be like a win-win where the disease is under good control and you feel well. But often for those of you who have treatment for lymphoma know that the treatments themselves can have side effects. When you're talking about treatment where the hope is to get rid of it forever, this is often combination chemotherapy, very strong treatments like bone marrow transplant. Usually those treatments cause a lot of side effects, but they're only given for a short period of time, sometimes just some months. And really, if the lymphoma stays in remission, the recovery after that, many people go back to feeling quite well. When the lymphoma has come back, or for some of the slower-growing lymphomas, if you're looking at treatments that are aimed more to just control the disease, meaning try to find a treatment that would help you get better but then keep you on that medicine, often then it's really a balance between finding a medicine that works for the lymphoma and often dealing with some of the side effects of being on those long-term. Pralatrexate, for instance, can sometimes cause sores in the mouth. For some people, it's mild and not too bothersome. For other people, it can really be problematic and make it hard to eat. There's a lot of things you can do with regard to hygiene of the mouth and mouth rinses. There's been some look at some other medicines to try to counteract some of those side effects. More often for that medicine, it's something where we just have to adjust the dose or the schedule. So there's days where people feel pretty well, but there might also be days where people are having more side effects. Similar for romidepsin, that's one of the medicines that we also use for this disease. In that case, one of the more common side effects is fatigue. So other than adjusting your schedule to cope with that, often adjusting the dose of the medicine and trying to give more time between doses can let people feel better on that. Again, it's often a balance between how well the medicine is working for your lymphoma and then how you feel day to day. For the brentuximab vedotin, the other medicine that we're commonly using these days, one of the main side effects of that is some injury to the nerve, so some numbness and tingling. That's a medicine that often gets better when you stop the medicine, when you stop the brentuximab vedotin. But if you're going to be on it long term, that's something that people often have to live with. We don't have good treatments to prevent neuropathy. We have some medicines to make it feel a little better, and that's something that you discuss with your doctor, the benefits of continuing versus stopping. So I think in a very, you know, general way, when you're looking at quality of life, you're really looking at what's the best treatment to get the lymphoma under good control and then balance that with the side effects that it might cause and then sort of look at the long-term strategy. Is this something that I just need to deal with a short period of time and then I'm going to be able to be off treatment for a long time? Or is this something that we're going to look for a mild treatment that I'm going to stay on for a while, really to try to keep a lid on the disease? But some of these treatments, while they can do that, don't really get rid of the disease permanently. So I think I'll conclude there and turn it back over.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Horowitz, for really doing quite the extensive review of really all of the different approaches that are for treatment of T-cell lymphoma, new approaches, clinical trials, and then just treating treatment side effects. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Max Mulcahy. And Mr. Mulcahy is Associate Director of Programs, Lymphoma Research Foundation. And he's going to address the free support programs offered by the Lymphoma Research Foundation. And again, I just want to thank him and Brian Tomlinson at the Lymphoma Research Foundation for really making today's program possible. Max?
Thank you, Carolyn. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for calling into our T-cell lymphoma teleconference today. I want to thank Cancer Care for putting this call together, and in particular, Carolyn Mesner, who does a really great job with all of our teleconference series calls. I also want to thank our speakers, Dr. Steve Horowitz and Dr. Julie Vose. Thank you to both of you. You speak at a lot of different programs that we put together. Thank you for being here today to deliver wonderful presentations. And also I want to thank, of course, our supporters, Celgene, Millennium, the Takeda Oncology Company, and Seattle Genetics. The Lymphoma Research Foundation is the nation's largest organization devoted exclusively to lymphoma. Our mission is to eradicate lymphoma and serve those touched by the disease. We accomplish this mission through our research program and the education programs and patient services that we provide. We have funded over $51 million in lymphoma research since the inception of the organization. Over 50,000 people access our programs and services each year, which means they're attending one of our live in-person educational meetings, one of our professional meetings, accessing our teleconferences, downloading webcasts and podcasts, or calling into the lymphoma helpline. By calling into the helpline, T-cell lymphoma patients can receive information about all types of T-cell lymphoma. We also offer a clinical trials information service where you can find out how to enroll in a clinical trial specific to your T-cell diagnosis and where that trial is closest located to you. We also, through our helpline, offer a lymphoma support network where we can match you with another T-cell patient so the two of you can offer each other support as you're navigating your T-cell diagnosis. This helpline service is staffed by trained professionals and is also available in any language. We also offer a transportation assistance fund that provides a $500 grant to T-cell patients that is meant to alleviate some of the transportation costs that patients incur getting to and from treatment. And you are able to reapply for this grant every 6 months that you're in treatment. That's a maximum of $1,000 a year. In order to qualify for the grant, you, number one, need to be a legal U.S. resident. And number two, you need confirmation from your physician that you are in treatment. And you can apply for this grant through our website or through calling our helpline. We also offer a variety of publications and newsletters, including 6 T-cell lymphoma fact sheets that focus on T-cell lymphoma, as well as T-cell-specific websites. We have 2 of them. The URLs to access those are focusonptcl.org and focusonalcl.org. And we also have a PTCL and ALCL-specific e-news. And all of these resources are meant to offer the most up-to-date information about these types of lymphomas and treatment options. We also have a variety of webcasts and podcasts, and they are from the T-cell sessions of our live meetings, and they're available on the podcast section of our website. And we also offer a comprehensive series of live educational meetings. We have a community program that's called Ask the Doctor that we do in 40 to 50 cities throughout the year, and it's a 2-hour program that features one physician. We also hold 5 T-cell-specific one-day seminars, and they offer a full day of T-cell-specific information, and we do 5 of them each year. We also have 5 regional workshops with cutaneous T-cell and peripheral T-cell lymphoma disease-specific sessions where patients can learn the basic biology of these lymphomas as well as what are the current treatment options and what are the novel therapies that are in development. And finally, we host the North American Educational Forum on Lymphoma each year. And this is a national meeting. It spans 2.5 days, and it features speaking faculty from all the major academic centers from across the United States. And much like at the workshops, they also offer a T-cell lymphoma-specific sessions, as well as sessions that provide patient and caregiver support. So for more information about all of these services and all of these educational programs, you can contact a member of our helpline team by calling 800-500-9976, or you can also write to them at helpline@lymphoma.org, or, of course, you can also visit our website, which is lymphoma.org. LRF is committed to helping and aiding patients with T-cell lymphoma, so I highly encourage you to utilize these valuable resources. Thank you very much. Thank you very much to Cancer Care, and thank you, Carolyn, and to all our speakers.
Well, thank you very much, Max. That's a really wonderful presentation and really so many resources for everybody on the call from the Lymphoma Research Foundation. So we so encourage you to take advantage, if you're not already, of all of these services. It's terrific. Thank you. And our next speaker is Ms. Erin Columbus. And Ms. Columbus is an oncology social worker, and she is going to go over with you the free psychosocial services offered by Cancer Care. And Erin Columbus is our Program Director of Online Client Services at Cancer Care. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to my colleague, Erin Columbus.
Thank you very much, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be part of this informative and insightful call today. As an oncology social worker here at Cancer Care, I'd like to talk for a few minutes about the emotional and social impact of cancer and how we can help you. When you're first diagnosed with cancer, it can be an extremely overwhelming experience. You're faced with a series of choices that will have a major impact on your life, and you may not know where to turn. Talking to a Cancer Care social worker can certainly help you to maximize the support you get from your healthcare team, especially in dealing with issues such as symptom management, finding out more about your treatment options, and basically learning how to navigate the system to get the best care possible. Cancer Care is a staff of licensed oncology social workers, and all of our services are completely free of charge. We're experienced in how a cancer diagnosis affects a person and their family and friends. And we're also trained to help patients and their loved ones manage the emotional, physical, and financial challenges that arise. One of the most important things to acknowledge about the emotional impact of cancer is that it can be felt as a loss. It can be a loss that manifests itself in many ways, from the loss of your independence to the loss of energy levels due to fatigue, and in the big picture, the loss of the life that you had before cancer. And specifically for people living with lymphomas, there are often many complex emotions that may accompany the diagnosis due to the far-reaching and chronic nature of the disease, as well as its side effects. These physical and emotional changes can often feel very difficult to manage. Additionally, it's caregivers who are often especially in need of counseling and support, because watching a loved one change in these ways can be very painful. So it's important to have an outlet to acknowledge these losses and to have someone you can talk to who will be supportive and empathic. This can mean talking one-on-one with a Cancer Care social worker, or it can also happen in one of our many online or face-to-face or telephone support groups. Cancer Care offers face-to-face groups in our local offices in the New York area, as well as telephone and online groups. These groups offer an opportunity to talk with other people impacted by cancer, along with the help of a Cancer Care social worker to facilitate the group. Participating in a group can be helpful simply by allowing you to talk with others who are in a similar situation and who truly understand in a way that no one else can. Group members offer encouragement and a real sense of community that can provide you with additional support, guidance, and practical advice. In fact, we are currently offering an online group for people with blood cancers. This is a safe and confidential space where you might find commonality with others. If you are interested in participating in this online group, please do visit our website at www.cancercare.org. for more information and instructions on how to register for this group. Lastly, cancer can certainly have a significant impact on your finances, and for many of the people that I talk to every day, this can be an overwhelming aspect of the diagnosis. Cancer Care provides limited financial assistance to help with transportation to treatment or help with home care, child care, or pain medication. We can also connect you with other organizations for additional assistance to help you with the costs of cancer. While we may not be able to resolve all the problems you're facing right now, a Cancer Care social worker provides a listening ear and the ability to walk alongside you as you navigate this difficult experience. Thank you all very much for listening.
Well, thank you so much, Erin, for that wonderful presentation and just for the review of all the services from Cancer Care. And I just want to repeat the phone number that you can call to access services at Cancer Care at 1-800-813-HOPE or 1-800-813-4673. And also the services that Erin reviewed with all of you can be so helpful to you as well. Well, now we have time for questions, and we have lots of time for questions. I'm going to ask Sam to let everyone know, to bring our speakers on board and to tell people how to queue up for questions. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Sam?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then the one key on your touch tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. And again, ladies and gentlemen, if you do have a question, please press star then one.
And we do have a question actually from one of our online participants, and the question has to do with, can cutaneous T cell mycosis fungoides and follicular B cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoma occur in the same person? If so, how often and how would treatment of one affect the other? Dr. Vos, could you address that?
Sure. Those are two distinct types of lymphomas, but they can occur in the same person. The treatment for those different types of lymphomas is quite different. So, for example, with the cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, we would usually use topical or skin-only therapies to start with, whereas the B-cell lymphoma, which would be systemic, would need typically chemotherapy or other types of therapy such as rituximab. So they are treated differently, and we would have to make sure that the side effects of the different treatments don't overlap and that the therapies are appropriate for that individual. So it's kind of very specific to that person.
Okay, thank you. And we have another question from one of our online participants, and that question actually is, what symptoms do patients come in with that determine the need for biopsies? I'm going to ask Dr. Horowitz, if you would address that.
Sure. It sort of depends on which type of lymphoma that we're talking about. So there's all different kinds of T-cell lymphoma. For most of the people with the faster-growing T-cell lymphomas or the systemic T-cell lymphomas, they would either notice a swollen lymph node that doesn't go away or got very big, or their doctor might notice that, or sometimes they would have symptoms like fevers or sweats or unexplained weight loss or something that would bring them to the doctor, and then you might do a CAT scan or a scan like that, and if that showed swollen lymph nodes on the inside, then a biopsy would be done. For people with skin lymphomas, it's often a little different because there's a lot of very common rashes that may not look like a T-cell lymphoma to the dermatologist, but there are people whose rashes will look a certain way or whose rashes or skin lesions don't go away that would make the dermatologist think, you know, could this be a lymphoma of the skin, or could it be a T-cell lymphoma of the skin? And then based on their suspicion of that, does it look like something common or does it look like that, they might do a biopsy to sort that out.
Excellent. And our next question, Sam?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sonia L. Your line is now open.
Thanks. I've been diagnosed with T-cell lymphoma, and there's a lot of therapies out there medically, but are there any naturopathic, holistic approaches that you might want to suggest?
Well, thank you, Sonia, for that really excellent question, and I'm sure that sometimes many people wonder about that. I'm going to ask both Dr. Vos and Dr. Horowitz to address that, and Dr. Vos, would you like to start?
Well, as far as I know, there aren't any homeopathic regimens that would be appropriate for different types of lymphomas. It's always important, of course, to take good overall care of yourself as far as having good nutrition, making sure that you have enough of the standard vitamins. We usually recommend, most people in North America are vitamin D deficient, so we usually do recommend vitamin D and calcium supplementation, especially for women. But as far as other therapies specifically against the lymphoma, there's none that I am aware of currently.
Dr. Horowitz?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think there's none that we've really tested well that we understand. You know, I would point out that for people with aggressive systemic lymphomas, those are things that could often become dangerous quickly. And the treatments that we have, albeit things like chemotherapy or bone marrow transplant, have side effects and risks, they do sometimes cure people, meaning they get rid of it forever. So if you're looking into other things that are sort of unproven, you would want to make sure that you weren't leaving a curative treatment on the table, because if you got very sick, that would be very important. Again, not that these things have been studied extensively. There are more immune system type therapy, though, particularly for some of the slow-growing T-cell lymphomas, medicines like interferons, which are sometimes used for mycosis fungoides or other cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, drugs like lenalidomide. Now, these are still medicines used to treat cancer, but these are drugs that may work more with the immune system or more with the body than what people think of as traditional chemotherapy. But nothing in terms of, that I know of, again, in terms of a specific herbal supplement or food supplement or something like that that treats it. For skin T-cell lymphomas, we sometimes use ultraviolet light, which is what comes out of the sun. So I guess maybe that's the closest thing we have to a truly natural therapy.
Could you also say something just about the when one is undergoing chemotherapy and the use of these other agents, what people should be aware of in terms of that? And the interaction, if someone is considering using an herbal agent and also in the midst of chemotherapy or active treatment.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very important point. You know, when we do studies in a lot of the clinical trials we talk about, those studies are done under fairly controlled circumstances. And whenever we put two new medicines together, we would always study that for safety. So we get nervous if people are taking a lot of supplements and we're giving them therapy, particularly if that supplement, we don't know how it might interact with the chemotherapy or with a new drug. So sometimes your doctor will be discouraging of that, but I think at a minimum you need to sort of be open and let them know everything you're taking, because our treatments for lymphomas do all have side effects, and knowing whether it's the medicine we're giving versus something else you're taking versus some unknown interaction of the two is really important to help keep you safe and also to help figure out how the treatment is working.
And the other issue, Sonia, that you really raise, which I'm sure is an issue for many people at some point in their treatment, is the issue of the concern about having treatment and worries about treatment. And I wonder if, Aaron, if you could comment on that in terms of the groups that we run here, in which people really do, where they kind of wonder, isn't there something else I could do that would be not quite as difficult to tolerate? And I wonder if, Aaron, you could comment on just the concerns that people have about starting treatment and that come up in some of the groups.
I think especially with the blood cancers and lymphomas, there is this kind of waiting period where people are wondering when the other shoe is going to drop. And so in the groups, that's a place for people to really gain or garner encouragement and some guidance in terms of how to cope with that unknown factor, and also just hear others' experiences with their treatment, whether they went through a transplant or they had chemo or other types of treatment. I think it really provides them with a beacon of hope to hear others who have gotten through this and survived this and or are surviving this. And so I think that really helps to alleviate a lot of stress, which, as we all know, stress is something that certainly affects our immune system. So I think that in terms of just being holistic, that is something that can contribute to any patient's quality of life.
So really sometimes, Sonia, people find getting that kind of support or counseling for anyone on the call can be really helpful when you're trying to where your physicians are encouraging you to begin treatment and you're a little bit worried about starting or a lot worried or actually frightened to start treatment and just to have a conversation with someone individually or in a group or to talk with your healthcare team. And Dr. Vose and Dr. Horwitz, is this something that you do that comes up with some people around just the point of you make a recommendation to start treatment and where it might be hard for someone to just make that step to begin?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really huge step for people to have to realize that that's, necessary to do. So if people are having difficulty with that, usually we would recommend that they, consider a second opinion to see if another oncologist who specializes in lymphoma says the same thing. Or also, as was previously mentioned, talking to other patients who have the same diagnosis or something similar to that and have recently gone through the procedure or treatment or have in the past, I think is also very helpful. And just talking with a number of different people and getting support to know that you're not alone and there's a lot of people out there that care and then can help you through the experience, I think is probably the most beneficial thing.
Thank you. Now, we have a question from one of our online participants, Richard. I was treated with CAMPATH plus Epoch in a clinical research at NIH. Now I am cancer-free for 4 years after stage 4 PTCL. He was wondering about CAMPATH, and is that something that is still being used? Dr. Horwitz, do you want to address that?
Sure. And that's fantastic to be in remission for 4 years, really. That's really a great result. CAMPATH is another one of those antibodies that I was talking about earlier, and it's targeted against a marker on the cells called CD52, which is on a lot of your white blood cells, including many T-cell lymphomas. So that's something that's been experimentally being looked at in combination with chemotherapy, there can be some good results with that. One of the reasons I didn't mention CAMPATH is because that drug has recently been withdrawn from the market, not for because it doesn't work or because it's unsafe, but because it's being used for multiple sclerosis. So it's being used in a different area. So that drug's not widely available. But if anyone needs that or their doctor thinks it's best for them, it is a drug that you can get through a special program, but the doctor has to request it specially, so it's not being commonly done. There are some studies still going on in Europe where it's being combined with chemotherapy for T-cell lymphomas, and we'll have some results of those bigger studies, we think, within the next couple of years. But that is something that may be part of some people's treatment.
Thank you. These are really great questions, I have to say, quite the audience. And Rob has a question about the progress on the availability of ONTAK, O-N-T-A-K. Dr. Vos, could you address that?
That medication was being reformulated, and so it's been not available for a while. It's my understanding that it is close to or currently being available in the very near future. So
this is a more general question from one of our online participants, from Ellen. What types of questions should I be asking my doctor regarding my treatment for T-cell lymphoma? So I guess really asking for maybe some of the specific things that she could ask. And I know that this is a general call, so of course we hope Ellen will take it back to your treating team. But I'm going to ask both Dr. Vos and Dr. Horwitz, and actually Brian and Aaron also, just comment, are there any particular questions that people really should be sure to include in their list of questions? Dr. Vos, do you want to go first?
Sure. I think it's just important for each individual person to know exactly what type of T-cell lymphoma they have, so when they're doing research online or through other things, that they know exactly what they're looking for. So that would be number one. I also usually recommend that patients actually get a copy of their pathology report to keep for themselves and any other information that's really important, such as their staging information. And then just to ask about what their treatment options are, because usually in this particular area case, there's not really one right option. There's different options available. So I would look for that and also look and ask for if there's any clinical trials that are available either at that area or in an area that would be close enough that they would be able to do that.
Excellent. And Dr. Horwitz, do you want to add
anything? I think those are really sort of the key questions, and those are really, really important. I think sometimes understanding the goal of therapy is important. For some of the slower-growing diseases, the goal of the treatment is to get them better and manage them. For some of the faster-growing lymphomas, sometimes the goal is to get rid of them permanently, and that often requires stronger therapies or things that might have more risk of side effects. So I think understanding sort of not just sort of what you're getting and what it's going to entail, but what is really the goal of what you're trying to accomplish, I think sometimes helps people make decisions. And then, and talking to your doctor about what's available and what else might be available, and do you have time to get a second opinion? If so, where would they recommend you look into that?
Excellent. And thank you. And Max, do you want to add anything?
I would just underscore what Dr. Vos and Dr. Horwitz said about the clinical trials. Asking if a clinical trial is available to you, what is a clinical trial, depending on if you're in the early stage of your diagnosis. I'll also just underscore the usefulness of our helpline, because we can help locate a clinical trial for you that matches with what your diagnosis is.
Excellent. That's an excellent point. That's very good. And Aaron, do you want to add anything as well? Any questions?
Sure, yeah, and just from kind of a quality of life perspective, really, and an educative perspective, really understanding your diagnosis and some of the intricacies, of which there are many. And if you don't, make sure that you're asking your doctor to explain what you don't understand, and make sure that you're keeping track of those things throughout the week or the weeks before you see your doctor. Keep a notebook with questions that you can jot down as you come up with them. And then really, I think side effects is a big one, just long-term and short-term. Sometimes maybe the short-term gets the focus, and then some of the long-term doesn't always, and so people are sometimes surprised by that. So I think that's an important component so that they can understand what they're going to be facing in their future, both now and later.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been an amazing team. I have to say this has been an amazing call. I want to thank all of you, both who called up on the telephone and those who posted their questions online. Just wonderful questions, just a great audience today. And I want to thank everyone for participating today. And I do want to remind everyone that this is, of course, a one-hour program, and that although the program will soon end, the services that you can access from the Lymphoma Research Foundation and from Cancer Care, those are continuing, you know, endlessly in terms of what your needs are. And you can call the Lymphoma Research Foundation at 1-800-500-9976, or you can contact Cancer Care at 1-800-813-4673. Most importantly, we don't want anyone to leave the call today thinking that you are alone. We want you to know that you're part of a community of support, and we're here to help you. And not only is Cancer Care and Lymphoma Research Foundation here to help you, but you have a whole listing of other resources as well. So I want to wish you all a very fine day, and thank you all for participating. And I do want to remind all of you that we do have a program in December. It's a post-ASH update on lymphoma, and it's December 20th, and you'll all get information about it, but I just wanted to give you a heads-up on it, and if you're interested, to go ahead and sign up for it. Thank you all, and you all take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes today's workshop. You may disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.